Hey, all you listeners, before we jump into the podcast, I'd like to take care of a couple legal issues and a little forbearance of what you're about to listen to. Some podcasts are somewhat explicit and touch on some harsh topics when it comes to the mental health field. Listener discretion is advised. Also, for the legal purposes and the protection of our show and guests, we'd like to also remind you that all these stories that are shared by everyone on air are alleged events that have occurred. Please keep that in mind. And again, we enjoy having you here. So welcome and enjoy the show. Good evening and welcome to Spread Hope Like Fire. This podcast is an open door for those seeking a little hope that'll spark a change. If you're new to the show, you can catch up on past episodes on YouTube. Also, the audio podcast has far more archived episodes. You can check those out on Spotify, Apple Podcast, Google Play Store, Stitcher, Stitcher Premium, and all your other major podcast carriers. When you visit the Apple Podcast Store, please give it a thumbs up, rate it, and write a review. It helps the algorithm. Tonight on the show, I have my friend Vanessa Valles, and we talk about how she moved from a smaller town and transitioned into a larger metropolitan area, how she's dealing with COVID, and just kind of check in on how she is. I haven't talked to her in a while, so it's catching up. We talk about Hollywood. It's going to be a fun chat. Stick around. Before we jump into the interview, I have to be honest. I have to be transparent with you guys how I always am. I'm re-recording this. I had the original version posted already, so I had to pull it down and re-upload the the links and everything, and it was a hassle. This is weird because it's me talking to me in the future, but it's going to be talking to me in the past. This is crazy. So I'm going to shorten it. I babbled on a lot. So the podcast, unfortunately, has brought me to a certain fork in the road, and I don't know which one to take. Well, I didn't know which one to take. I know which one we're taking now. The road in which this podcast has led me, because I started this thing 4 years ago, sitting in my shed. Remember, I was scared and all this stuff to talk about mental health, and the whole goal of it was to break the stigma of mental health so we could talk about it. I mean, I had quite a few guests sitting in the shed talking with me about what happened to them, and it's grown and evolved, and it's made those connections that I wanted it to make with people, to let people have that feeling that they weren't alone. And so the podcast has achieved that goal. So the podcast has achieved its goal, and there is now a path in which is being presented to me. My scope in which I started this path on was to help a person at a time with therapy as a psychotherapist, to make an impact and try to change people's lives by showing them that there was other paths to take and that they could improve their life. And as I went down that road, I started to see the need in which I was, I guess, meant to take on. And because working with people as a therapist sometimes becomes hard. It's you hear a lot of the same stories that you went through. It's just the cycles that we've all experienced. And at points, it's like, and in certain points, it's like you're sitting and talking with yourself because it's the same trauma. So what I'm getting at is my range of which I want to take on and try to help has widened. And so I am proud. I am proud to be standing in the position I am standing. And tonight you all witness the result of my decision. This podcast is going to be more impactful. It's going to take on more. It's going to tackle more issues. The largest issue is we need to start talking about mental health. We need to start opening up and telling everybody that it's okay not to be okay. What we want to do is advocate for mental health services. So as I began the process, I started to watch several people who had large impacts in my life, whether they knew it or not. I called upon these six people and I laid out my plan to form a foundation, a nonprofit foundation. But there is one more person before I give you the foundation who has a special message to all of the listeners, a message of hope, a message in which he hopes to spread hope like fire. I'd like to throw it over to Dr. Drew Pinsky.
Hey, Dr. Drew here. Tony Garcia, thank you so much for asking me to swing by. You have no idea how meaningful your words are to me. Tony tells me that, you tell me, Tony, that Loveline helped motivate you to want to be a mental health professional, and that's the highest praise I know of. And more so, the fact that you were out there trying to fight the good fight, and you were forming a not-for-profit, Spread Hope Like Fire, which is a great name. Hope, gratitude, faith, these are the important words for people. Grace, these are really important words these days. We've got to connect with each other. We've got to support each other. Tony, you're out there doing the work in the trenches, and I thank you for doing that. Mental health work is hard. I know you want to reduce stigma as well. One of the things that bothers me about stigma, well, oftentimes in our well-meaning attempt to reduce stigma, we increase stigma. And to me, the worst part of stigma is when self-stigma kicks in on the individual and they develop a why try attitude. They feel broken. And that's when things can get rough. But stigma can also get turned around. When people feel stigmatized, oftentimes they can find an internal resource to mobilize on behalf of their condition and become an advocate. So in some ways, you know, having an illness that is stigmatized can help people motivate and find purpose. So to help people, of course, Spread Hope Like Fire can hopefully help people get well enough to be able to do that and then motivate to mobilize on behalf of their own condition and so many people suffering from these same conditions, either common disorders. And strangely, we've been dealing with them very poorly for quite a while now, and today is no exception, and yet we have good treatments. Tony, Anthony, if you'll permit me, treatment works. And I'm sure you know that because you're there doing the work. And Spread Hope Like Fire, I have my deepest hope is that you will have great success with this, because in so doing, you will help many, I have no doubt. So anyone here interested, mental health is a common condition. These are brain disorders. It's weird that we treat brain conditions any different than any other organ system in the body, but weirdly we do. So they are brain disorders. They have psychological concomitants to them, and those need to be worked on as well. But ultimately it is our brain that needs our intervention. And the treatment works. Treatment really does work. It's a whole different era in managing mental health disorders and brain conditions. And Tony, Anthony, thank you for all the work you do, and thank you for Spread Hope Like Fire.
I can't thank Dr. Drew enough. He was a key integral part in why I became a therapist. Loveline played a big role in who I am. Loveline played a huge role, and this is surreal for me. Thank you, Dr. Drew. So the members of the board and myself are excited to present to you tonight the Spread Hope Like Fire Foundation. Our mission, break the stigma of mental health. We have many projects in the pipeline. We are in its infancy stages right now and are not accepting donations nor asking for them, as we are still in the infancy stages of forming our plans. The plans in which I can share with you at this time are we plan to team and build relationships with our local schools so that we can go in and present mental health and talk about it openly to destigmatize it, to just start talking about it and present mental health through the podcast. This is now what the goal is of Spread Hope Like Fire. We will be offering scholarship to teens who are going to pursue higher educations and breaking the cycles in which they find themselves in. And so we are going to reward those who want to seek higher education and get out of the cycle. For now, we're excited just to present to the world, Spread Hope Like Fire.
In our darkest of times, we can feel completely alone, isolated, no hope, no light. Sometimes that darkness leads us on a path. They say it's darkest before the dawn. We're coming. Help is on its way. This is the doorway for those seeking a little help that's going to spark a fire of hope. So join us as we break down the stigma of mental health. Spread Hope Like Fire, the nonprofit foundation, is setting its sights on destigmatizing and breaking the stigma surrounding mental health. We are going to be offering mental health support programs. We have several projects currently in the pipeline that focus on group mental health programs, scholarships for teens seeking higher education. Let's start talking about mental health. Tonight on the show, Vanessa Valley. And tonight on the show, I am very pleased to have this guest on, Vanessa Valley. It's been a while since we talked. She was living in town, but she decided it wasn't for her, and she moved to the big city. How does that feel, Vanessa?
It feels great. I mean, ever since I was a little kid, I've always wanted to leave that town. So finally did it. finally was able to do it on my own and bring my kids and my boyfriend along too. So we've been here for 3 years.
That's great. I was envious when I seen the post. You're like, I'm moving to Los Angeles. And I'm like, so yeah. So moving to the big city and you know, having like a culture shock, what was that like for you? For those people that want to do it, what do they experience? What do they expect?
Yeah. Well, for me, like even living in Santa Maria, I never really even felt like connected to the culture there, you know, which is very nice. And, you know, I grew up with it and like all my friends all, you know, enjoy it. And, you know, like I wanted to have other cultures in my life and for my kids. So that's mainly the reason why I wanted to leave, other than the fact that since I was a little girl, I was obsessed with like Hollywood and movies and, you know, Marilyn Monroe. If you've ever been to my house, like when I used to have parties when I lived in Santa Maria, it was just my whole house was all just like vintage stuff and movie posters everywhere. So like, it always was like my dream to live here, but also like even having kids and growing up in Santa Maria, I was like, I got to get my kids out of here just to experience more. And, you know, if they ever want to go back there, you know, we have some ties there, but it's, my brother's gone, my sister's gone. Like all my siblings are not there. So, and my mom's not there. My dad's not there. So I was like, let me get out of here too. And so I found comfort being here because everything I love is here and there's opportunities in the field I work in. So I knew I would have better chances of like a exciting life. And that's what I wanted for my kids too, to just have all the cultures. Cause you know, it's like in Santa Maria, there's not a lot of like Black people that I was close to. There's not a lot of, you know, Korean, you know, Dominican and Arabic people. Like here, there's Armenian people everywhere. There's all kinds of cultures that you can, you know, try food here. You can go see a show here. You can go visit this town and you can, you know, just even working, I have so many different types of friends than I had in Santa Maria and they come from other places and they tell me things. So it's just, that's what I wanted for my kids and for myself too.
That sounds fun. My spot when I used to visit frequently, it's not even there anymore. Well, the Angels Flight is. Angels Knoll Park is gone. Like they closed it.
I don't know what that is.
Oh, I used to go there all the time and do like meditating. It's the park from 500 Days of Summer. And, it overlooks, I think it's China, part of Chinatown's to the like to the west of it. And then overlooking in front of you, you have the metro that goes underneath, but then you have the buildings of downtown and you just sit there and you can overlook and you see it. It was a beautiful park, but then somebody stole the plaque from the bench. And then you have, so within that like spectrum too, you have within those cultures, subcultures, which I like, shout out to German in Venice. He's the one that I watch a lot on YouTube that he goes out to Venice. He goes out to downtown LA and he shows the different aspects in which a lot of our society overlooks, which is like the homelessness, the drug addiction. A lot of the mental health cases are down there. And is that something you normally see like on a day-to-day basis?
Yeah, definitely. Where I live right in the middle of downtown in Koreatown. That's MacArthur Park. And if you know, if anybody's listening knows what MacArthur Park is,
you get some purses.
My uncle is like, you can get a fake ID there. You can get anything there. You know, you can get drugs. And I'm right across the street from it. So there's homeless literally like surrounding us right now. And then at the park, you know, there's tents lined up on Wilshire Boulevard that cuts through the park. And there's just like tents lined up. And then there's the lakes and there's grass, but the grass is like brown. It just doesn't look, you know, as beautiful as it can be. And that park has been there since like the 20s. And you still have the like the old vintage 20s signs up on the building surrounding the park. So it looks like it should be like so beautiful, but these people don't have anywhere to go, you know, or they don't want to go anywhere, you know, or they're mentally ill and they need help. So it's definitely something that we see. Like just recently a woman, she was shooting birds in the sky at that park right here. And the cops were surrounding her and she had a gun. Then she jumps in the water and swims to like the center island where all the birds kind of chill. And she's shooting at them. She's shooting in the sky. And she's shooting the ducks and she just, obviously she's, you know, she needs help. She's mentally, she has some challenges going on there or drugs. And they ended up shooting her. I don't know how, but I was coming in from work and like the whole place was surrounded and there's traffic and I have the Citizen app and it tells you what's going on. So I had that on. So I was like reading like what happened and they ended up shooting her and they were there for like all night, kind of just like closing up the scene, I guess. But in that park specifically, that stuff always happens. They even have to like close it down at night and there's cops in there kind of just like patrolling it because so much bad stuff happens there. Even in the stores around me, there's homeless people just hanging out, you know, and they don't bother, you know, us or anybody, but you know, you just feel bad because we know the city is not doing what they could do. In Echo Park also, they just cleaned it up too because during COVID, the whole place was was taking over. It was like a, you know, like a camp basically at that, like at this point. So they had to, there was protests against, you know, kicking the homeless out. But it started being like a health hazard, you know, all that stuff. The birds and the other wildlife there wasn't doing well, and there's trash everywhere. So there was protesters there kind of like trying to prevent the cops from coming and cleaning it up. But I think they did, and they fenced the whole thing up. So it's definitely in this area a lot. I just came from Beverly Hills this morning, and it's like the guy who drove me in my Uber, nice Tesla, you know, I was like, oh shoot, we're in Beverly Hills. And then I feel so bad because he's driving. You just go straight shot to my house, to Beverly Hills. It's one street. Takes like 20 minutes. And you see just the vast difference of coming from Beverly Hills, driving into Koreatown, and then coming into where I live. And I'm just looking around like this poor guy with his Tesla. These streets are bad over here. But you see the big difference. And it's like you wonder, you know, what they're doing over there to keep the homeless people away. And, you know, they have to go somewhere, you know. And it's, they need help. And I feel like the government here is not doing enough.
It's a hard topic to cover because there's so many, like there's so many moving parts. Like even coming in from a psychological standpoint, you have to take into consideration a couple of things. One, what is their mental status? Is it mild, moderate, severe? What are they dealing with? What kind of help do they want? Do they even want help? Yeah. How do you access this help? I mean, German and Venice too interviewed a lot of the homeless down in Skid Row, and the homeless in Skid Row were saying like they don't go to the shelters because the shelters are literally there to just collect a paycheck for the numbers that they're counting. And they want them to do X, Y, and Z in order to be housed there. And there's all these stipulations. It sucks because there's so much red tape. A lot of the times they don't want help, which is fine. Yeah,
that's true.
It's totally cool. If you don't want help, then, you know, then there has to be some sort of resolution to come. Because you got to think, too, your kids are seeing this. You don't want to... you don't want to inflict that emotional trauma upon them, because it is like you said, imagine you have your daughter or your son, and it's like this lady's shooting birds. Who's to say that bullet's not going to hit you? And it's like, oh, it's hard. It's a hard spot to be put in, and I can only come from the mental health aspect. So moving from the small town to the big city and doing all that transitioning and being successful at it, I'm very impressed with a lot of the things you've accomplished. And it's nice. I love when my friends achieve. That's just like the best feeling I can have, is because I know you guys are happy. That's all I want, is for my friends and the people I know, even listeners at home, clients, whatever. I want people to achieve their goals. It's the best fucking thing you can ever do in life, is achieve your goal. And it shows you put in the hard work. So how would you say you've maneuvered with the COVID, the beginning of COVID, the job? Because you moved, literally, you said, from Santa Maria to LA for a bigger, better job. How did that all go?
It went good. I worked with H&M in San Luis Obispo in that store there. I knew I wanted to move here. I just had my second child, my daughter Margot. And like when I get an idea to do something, I'm always gonna follow through on it, even if I stop thinking about it for a while. I always go back to it, and I'm always gonna try to make it happen. So what I did was I knew the recruiter because he hired me for a previous job in Santa Maria. So I reached out to him on LinkedIn and I said, hey, are there any spots available for H&M? Cause he switched jobs to H&M also. So I was like, is there any visual merchandiser positions available in your district in LA? And he was like, oh my God, yes, there's this new store opening. We would love to have you. Like, let's do it in 5 months, you know? And I was like, oh my God, it's freaking happening, just like that. I felt like, you know, doing things like that, reaching out, you know, having a good rapport with people, you know, it helps you in the end when you want to have somebody have your back to vouch for you to go to, you know, to work for them. So I felt good about that. I felt good that I was able to land it on my own without like speaking to my bosses here, speaking to somebody there. It all had to do with just him knowing me. And I felt good about that. Transferred here. Decided that I wanted to do more sort of a corporate level job. Got the job with Levi, and then COVID happened, and I was really bummed because I was just getting the hang of it. I was just because it's really like numbers based. I have 4 stores I would go to, kind of working on people relations and how to, you know, talk business, you know, and I've never really done that. It was all just very surface level in my retail positions. So I was really excited to finally get into that field. And then COVID happened and they laid off half of our team. And now I'm kind of like, I was just at home kind of just taking care of the kids during COVID, and they gave us severance, and it was like a really good experience and how they you know, let us all go. But it was just, it was like a bummer. A lot of us had to go. A lot of my friends that started working there too, they all got laid off too. And we all had a group chat trying to just like cope with it and knowing that we all had to start all over again. Some were my age and some were older. So yeah, I just stuck to staying home, even though it was really hard because I'm used to working. I'm used to doing something about something. I'm never somebody who just sits idly and feels sorry for myself. So I was kind of like, just apply to jobs. And I'm like, but if you apply to jobs, who's going to be here with your kid, you know? So it was a lot mentally on me because I felt really useless, even though I was here for my kids. I've just never like assumed the role of a mother, like a lot of great mothers do. So it was hard for me to just be a mom and not work. Like I always had that, like, you know, you got to hustle, you got to do things. And just being here and doing homeschooling and making lunch and snacks, it was like a really like a kind of a crisis in my head of like, who am I? You know, like this is all you are, you know, like do more. And when I'm doing, this is what I'm where I should be, you know, but it took me a while to kind of like get comfortable with the role of being a full-time mom and just collecting that, you know, paycheck from unemployment. Like that was weird for me too. But, you know, I think it did so much with my relationship with my kids. And he needed, my son, he's 7, he needed a lot of one-on-one help with school, and he needed a lot of attention with school. Like he was so far behind in like reading and just, you know, had a lot of challenges and just like in class settings, he needed the one-on-one. So it was really great. But like I said, it was really hard. It was a challenge for me mentally.
You bring up some good things that I'm seeing in my own field with the kids, which is with the closing of schools and us having to go to distance learning, distance working. Here's what is happening behind the scenes for those that don't have kids and are not actually experiencing this. The kids are actually, what they're doing is polar shifting on us, where kids who were completely social butterflies moved over to introverts. The introverts now are to a degree social butterflies, or they're leading into more maladaptive behaviors. They don't have that stimulus that they need, or the stimuli that they need in order to thrive and grow, which is what they need with their cohorts, like their group. So we're seeing parents who are just completely shocked, like, what's wrong with my kid? How do I fix my kid? I think something's wrong with my kid. My kid's broke. Like literally, I've had some people tell me my kid's broken. How do I do that? And it's literally, you've taken your kid's life and you turned it upside down. How have you noticed any of this with your own?
Yeah, he really is social, but he was also behind like verbally. So I think he had a hard time conversing with friends in class and stuff. Like he was very just physical. Like he would physically let them know he wants to be their friend. Like he's very touchy. But he wouldn't like start conversations and kids would, you know, embrace him. He's now like that. I think he's kind of grown to get there. But before he had just a lot of trouble because I think people knew he was a little bit behind in just his speech, and I think they kind of just like looked at him kind of like funny. I think he got picked on a little bit, and he even told me one time he was crying because some kid was picking on him, and I was like, I'm gonna beat him up. I told him, I was like, tell me who he is, I'm gonna beat him up. And he was even scared to see this kid potentially during Zoom, so I was like, what the heck, who's this kid? But now he seems to have grown more confident with his education, so I see him definitely blossoming even more, like to make friends and to talk to people.
Tips and tricks with a psychotherapist. Today I'm going to focus on trauma. Not just trauma, but I'm going to hone in on childhood trauma. You see, childhood trauma is very important to us. It is a lot of the traumas that we experienced as children that had not been resolved. Emotionally, they bury themselves deep in our subconscious levels. Let's take a moment and think. Did you experience any trauma as a child? Did you feel unsafe? Did you feel fear? Did you feel uncertainty? Did people explain things to you as a kid as to how the world worked around you? Did you have a good, solid understanding, or somewhat to a degree, have a good understanding to where you felt safe? In the field, we see quite a bit of people in their adult stages of life that don't feel these things. They don't feel safe. They don't feel secure. They doubt themselves. They have negative emotions. The one emotion that really, really sparks within people is anger. Anger is just a symptom of something that we're experiencing, and that is hurt. When that hurt is activated, that is our childhood trauma coming to the present to kind of guard us and to keep us in a state of survival because we do not feel safe. If you are experiencing these types of negative emotions, and if it's leading towards a panic attack or your thoughts are rapidly racing, I'm suggesting do one thing. Start to come to the here and now, the present, because the present is safe. You see, the negative emotions and depression lie within our childhood's past. Become aware of your senses and the things that are around you. What is it that it feels like for the air to touch your skin? How are you walking? How are your heels hitting the ground as you walk? Focus in on the breathing and know that you're not alone. Childhood trauma is very hard to overcome, but there is hope. For now, tell yourself that you are here, you are present, and you are safe. And I would suggest getting out and talking to someone. Find a therapist around you or talk to a friend. Talking always opens up doors for you to be able to process a lot of the traumas and experiences that we have gone through negatively in life in order to come to a positive understanding in which situations we experienced. This has been Tips and Tricks from a Psychotherapist.
It's like you get, if like kids, they get used to bullying, you know, then they have that anger in them. They bully other kids. It's a cycle. So I think if you see violence, you just think it's normal constantly. I say my childhood is the same way. Just like, oh, that's also why I just didn't want to be there in that town, because there was just a lot of memories that were not happy, you know, like childhood in that town. And like, I would drive by the house I used to live in when I was a kid, you know, and this is where my mom got arrested. My mom got raided at this house. You know, it was just always, it's just like, it, I don't know if it's still the same. I think I see a lot of families now that like my friends or my generation, they're like doing amazing. You can just see that like they're creating this like family, this healthy family lifestyle there, which is amazing. And I wish, you know, you think about when you're a kid, like, I wish it was like that when I was a kid, you know, like, yeah. Things are different. Things are different now. Like, I think because we all learned, like, they probably had parents like I did too, you know, who knows, and they knew the mistakes, what's correct, you know?
So with your son facing all this, is there any support that was put into place for you guys as parents throughout the COVID, especially for those, because I was actually wondering, how do the kids, like those that are needing internet access, what happens for those that can't read? Like, I was thinking about what I would have done if I was a kid. Like, how would I have interacted? Who would have read this stuff to me? How would I operate this stuff? Like, where were you getting any support from?
No, we weren't. Mainly, I think, because of COVID. So what we had to do was I was working with H&M, and then I just continuously seeing my son failing and not really, well, his dad's here, but his dad also works really late at night. We switch off schedule. So I'm in the morning, he works at night. So one of us is always here with the kids. So sometimes he'd miss school, or he wouldn't help him with you know, the daily work while he was in school, because like you were saying, he does need, because he can't read, he doesn't know how, like, the prompts really of like jumping in and like following along when the teacher says, okay, write this down, do this. So you kind of, someone needs to be there to be like, did you hear what he says? You know, you gotta follow along, you know. So I quit my job at H&M after I left Levi. H&M hired me right back right away. The same store that I was working at before, they took me back. So I decided that I had to quit my job with H&M. I had some money saved and I was like, let me take some time to focus on my kid's school and help him with that, because I wasn't doing good at work because it was just so much work and I wasn't doing good at home. So I kind of just decided which one I wanted to focus on. So I just quit one day, and then I started every day just being with him and doing the work with him, because he does need somebody to, even doing homework, I can't say, okay, do this page, I'll be back in, you know, 15 minutes, check on you, whatever. I have to go through every step of the homework with him, every word, and explain to him everything. Even though he just went over it in class, like, I know he wasn't really focusing or paying attention, and you can just kind of tell, like, you know, their eyes glaze over, they're not really looking at the teacher and writing things down. So I had to be there with him, you know, 5 hours a day in the morning, sometimes less, you know, if we didn't get him there on time, but just being the teacher with the teacher, basically, and sitting there. And, you know, and then right after that, it's like, okay, you're going to do in-home classwork. And it's like, now the teacher's gone, and now I'm doing the one-on-one with him. And then later on at night, now we're doing the homework with him. It was just like all day, and he needed someone there all day, because otherwise it wouldn't get done. So, like, the support that we were going to get from the school was they were going to do an assessment on him to try to identify some of their learning challenges that they could possibly have, mm-hmm. just because he is behind in reading. So that was also got pushed back, because we asked for that before COVID and we never got answers back on when that could happen. So we finally just had a meeting with them maybe like 2 weeks ago about setting a date to actually go through that, because they wanted to see if, like, how the one-on-one with me being at home with him, if it would help him and how much it would help him and if he needs more after that. We see that he's made major, like, improvements. He has had, like, one-on-one tutorings on the side also with a different teacher, along with me. So now they're finally going to give him the assessment that he needs, and that has to do with, like, kind of like the auditory responses to things, how his speech therapy, and also his just like social interactions and behaviors and how he responds to teachers and authorities and stuff like that without us there and with us there, and, you know, how he acts. So that's barely starting to happen, and it's been like 2 years since he asked for it, so it's barely, and due to COVID, that's why it took so long to get it all going. But it did take, just had to quit my job just to get him to a point where it's like, okay, now they'll help us because they see we're doing our part.
It seems like no matter what task is put in front of you or what challenge, you just knock it down. Why? Why do you do that?
That's probably the one quality that I do have that I honor about my mom, is that she always, like, took care of stuff herself.
Oh, it's
she
okay.
always handled it. Because she, you know, a single mother, you know, doing her thing to make money and mm-hmm. hustling and, but she did it all herself too, and so I think that's the one quality that I did take from my mom that I really admire. She's very, like, you know, thug life. I'm the opposite of that, you know. She's very she was born in Mexico, but she came here when she was four, and then mm-hmm. she got deported because she was breaking the law and she also wasn't keeping up with her, like, paperwork. So she's been there, and it's been hard, and I feel bad because she's my mom. But at the same time, I was like, I never felt, like, closely bonded to her, like a mother-daughter usually is. Mm-hmm. So I always just kind of, like, did things on my own anyways. I never asked her for help, really. If we did, it was like, she asked me for help, I asked her for help. It was kind of like friends, you know. I would hang out and party with her, too, when I was young, and drinking with her when I was young. And just sort of didn't, like, see her, like, as the, you know, when you go to when you need help and stuff. So I basically, like you're saying, I just always did things myself. I always found a way. I'm very resourceful, you know. I can figure things out. And even, you know, with my family and taking in my brother when she got sent away, I had to do that. I had to take on that role too. I have an older brother, but he lives over here in Rialto. It's like right where I live, but way inland, like about an hour inland, so we're close. But he was always, he was in the war in Iraq, you know, he was doing that. And then he was also stationed somewhere in Colorado, and then he got married, and it was just, you know, me basically having to be the mom to my younger siblings. And so I think that's probably why I kind of just took on that role.
It's really cool. It's really cool to see the resilience in us, especially you. Like, I'm going to bring this up through the whole podcast. I'm envious that you got to move to Los Angeles, and you know, I'm just envious. I think at this point, because of all the good food you get to choose from, that's literally, yeah, I think the only part of it that I'm jealous of, because I don't want to do film anymore. And
no more books.
Oh, well, books, but I'm actually working on my next book. No, so yeah, I would totally lurk around film sets if I could. Yeah. I lurk around like the places I like to go in LA are kind of like out of the ordinary places that you like. Angel Knolls Park, like that's one of the places I like to frequent. I like to hike up to the top of the Hollywood sign.
I love being here because I like knowing. Because I'm a huge fan of like the 40s and the 50s and the 60s, so I think of like, you know, they have the restaurant Musso and Frank's right there on Hollywood Boulevard that's been there since I don't remember when, but I went to eat there. I'm very romantic. I romanticize it all. You know what I do is like that movie. What's that movie called? I don't know over there. Once Upon a Time in Hollywood. You know that movie came out with Brad Pitt and you know. So that movie is coming out, and in the movie, they have the restaurant Musso and Frank's. They shoot in the movie with Al Pacino in that theater. I mean, in that restaurant with Leo and Brad Pitt. They shot a scene for the movie in that restaurant. So I made a reservation to eat there the day the movie premiered, and we saw the movie in the same theater that they shot a scene in front of that theater. So I kind of like make it a whole experience, you know, like just to feel like, because I love it so much, just like the time, you know, those old historical buildings, you know, all the history that's there from all these movie stars, even though like, yes, Hollywood's corrupt and there's a bunch of pervs everywhere. I understand that too, but, but there's the great part of it that I love. And that's why I wanted to live here, even though, like I said, there's the culture and everything, but it really all stems from when I was a kid and like loving Marilyn Monroe and watching her movies and renting them from the library and taking them to my room and watching them on my VHS, you know, like that's where the moving here stems from. I romanticize it all of like, oh, over there, Judy Garland did this and, you know, did this. And I just walked by it and oh my God, you know, as silly as it sounds, like that's where like my heart is. And they have that saying about Hollywood is or LA, like, it's a state of mind. And it really is, because you look on the streets and there's trash everywhere. It's kind of like a mess, and there's crime and there's violence and cops. But it's a state of mind. It's in your head of like why you love it and why you feel it's special. And you only feel it's special to you. Like anybody else, you're like, no, this is my town. This is my space. You know, like you make it like it's yours. And that's why it's a state of mind. And that's what I love about it. And I never felt like a connection like that with any other place.
You explained Hollywood. You explained Hollywood to the T and how I feel about it. My eras are different. Yes, I thought
so.
But yeah, my eras are different. My eras are 80s, 90s.
Oh, man.
So like my spots that I romanticize, even though it's fucking creepy. So I go to Genesee Avenue. Down on, it's off of Sunset. If you go down that street, Genesee Avenue and Sunset, you make a left at the lights. Five houses in on your left, the man of your dreams lives there. His name's Freddy Krueger. Oh. I go to the Nightmare on Elm Street house. Across the street's Johnny Depp's house. Fun fact about Johnny Depp: did you know his first film was A Nightmare on Elm Street?
When you went into the bed.
Was yeah, Nightmare on Elm Street. Yeah, he went into the bed. Yeah.
I didn't know that was his first.
That was his first movie, which I thought was like, I was like, what the hell?
Nice connection. I saw, what's his name from Star Trek?
Will the bald Wheaton. One. Oh, no. The bald guy. Captain Picard or whatever. I don't know his real name.
But I saw him, though. He's sitting. I even texted my grandpa because he loves Star Trek, and I was like, I'm here at Musso and Frank's, and I see, and I knew his name then, and I can't remember his name, but that's the only famous person that I recall seeing.
Okay, so
in the restaurant.
If you ever come across famous people, it is true. You never want to meet your idol. You just don't.
Right.
So for like me, it would be like Ozzy Osbourne, and a couple other people. Ozzy, I probably would want to meet. But that's just me. They're jerks. Yeah. It's crazy. So I'm not all. I imagine. Of them. Like, so I met Conan O'Brien at his show, though, because I got tickets, and I have a tattoo on my ankle of him, and I showed him. Mm-hmm. That was the only guy I've ever been starstruck with, though. Oh, I've never been starstruck with anybody. I was just like, you guys are normal people to me. Like, I don't give a fuck what you do. I used to play paparazzi, too, with people I used to take for fun. Like, I'd be like, so you guys want to go on a trip? Like, I take friends. You want to go on a paparazzi trip? And they're like, what is that? I'm like, if you just say yes and fucking come, you'll have the best time of your life. Swear to God. And so, I would go and I'd start on Robertson. And that's where the paparazzi are. So I always start the paparazzi trip there. And I start I don't know if they're there anymore, but I would start talking to them. Who are you looking for? Blah, blah, blah. And I'd just befriend them. And then I'd find out who and what and where in the city they were looking for. And then I just start following people. And so that's how we ended up seeing a lot of people. Like Bridget, I had my friends in the car, and we're driving in through Beverly Hills. This is the Beverly Hills City Park is where the Playboy Mansion's at. She's driving her red convertible. And I just fucking flipped a U in front of like the middle of everybody on Sunset. And I followed her back to her house, and she's so scared. And I'm like, there's Bridget, take pictures. And like, that's the kind of trips I would do. And
seriously, I wish I could see paparazzi. I was over there on Robertson just right now. I had an appointment over there, and there's so many buildings over there, and everything's so fancy. I was like, oh my God. I met Max DeMarco. I forgot.
Was he nice?
Max DeMarco is?
Yeah.
Yeah, we took a shot with him. We went to a Conan Moccasin concert in Silver Lake, and he was at the bar, and I was coming out of the bathroom, and my boyfriend was already talking to him, and he's like, we're going to take a shot with him. And I was like, oh my God, we take a shot of Jack Daniels with him. And then I was standing next to my boyfriend, and then Mac DeMarco was like, geez, you're with her? And my boyfriend was like, yeah. And then he grabbed me and pretended like he was walking away with me, like right in front of my boyfriend, just to be a jerk. It was funny. And I was like, oh my God. I was like walking with him. It was crazy. And it's weird because he was cool, but like you're talking to him and everything. And I didn't even think like take a picture. I didn't even think autograph. Like you're just talking to them. Yeah. It was just like a normal person.
That's what they are. At least to me. Like I could talk Hollywood with you all day. I know.
We should tell me all the hot spots.
So with you moving, taking on the big city, and thriving, it sounds like this move and this choice, this big choice in your life, has taken you into a path that has improved your mental health, your physical health, your all around happiness. Your kids are experiencing a lot more cultures. It's been a big improvement for you. What is some advice that you would give the listeners and viewers at home for those thinking that they can't do what you've done?
Mm-hmm. I think the first thing is like making sure that you're doing something that you love to do, and just making small making small goals to kind of achieve, you know, higher and higher placement and jobs and everything, just with that small steps, small goals, until you feel comfortable and confident and ready. Like I know being here in LA interviewing in fashion jobs, it's very competitive here. So I've been on like so many interviews. I've been on interviews with Saks Fifth Avenue, Nordstrom, like places in Beverly Hills, Gucci. I interviewed with Gucci and I didn't get any of those jobs. But what I did learn was how to interview and how to speak about yourself confidently and how to embrace, you know, the things that you're good at and feel good about them, so you can speak about them and they can see that. And you can definitely learn a lot just from interviews, definitely learn a lot from just failures. And I think being, just don't be scared. Like there's only so much time that we have. And I think when I left Santa Maria, I knew it was time to go. And I knew my family needed to change. My relationship needed to change. And I think just taking responsibility and taking charge and saving and money, saving anything you have to do, it's going to pay off in the end all the time. You'll never not get anything from challenging yourself. And if you don't get what you want, you'll learn something from it. And that's something that I always look to, like even little arguments I have with my boyfriend, I'm like, okay, so what do we do about it? You know, I always look for solutions in things. So I don't feel like I'm just stuck on a hamster wheel.
You covered a lot of things that people don't want to do. Mm-hmm. If you want success, I always tell you guys, consistency. I don't give a fuck if you don't want to do it, do it. If you have something better to do, pass on that something better to do and focus in on honing your craft, making yourself better and scaling up. Seriously, yeah. If you want something in life, don't let anybody tell you no. You find a way to get it. This is why I say that I have in my personal life, I have surrounded myself with people like Vanessa. People that are able to say, okay, no one owes me anything. I'm just going out and I'm going to take what is mine. And I don't mean violently. What I mean is you're kicking in doors because you have to learn these things. No one's going to teach you how to interview but yourself. You can look it up. You can research it. And then you go through the experience. You fail. You take that failing and you add it to your progression as a person. We're not perfect. And so what we want to do is scale up. But in order to do that, we have to do a few things. One, we have to say that no one owes us anything. Once we do that, we have unhooked ourselves from any liability, any blame, or anybody else having any control over our lives whatsoever. You cannot have a successful life if you're selling your emotions, your ethical standards, your morals, and what you want. If you're selling yourself short, you're not going to get where you want to be. Vanessa, you're the proof, the living proof to everybody listening and everybody viewing. No one owes us anything. She grew up, she grew up the same town I did and a lot of the same ways I did. Look at us. We didn't take no for an answer. She's doing better than I am, I would say, because she's living, you're living the dream. You're living in somewhere I just love. It's been great having you on the show because you're sending that message, especially as a female in a big city dealing with rejection. I know what that rejection is. I have a whole box in my garage that I saved of all the rejection letters over the years of like submitting scripts, submitting pitches, and like, just them saying no. I don't even give an explanation. For somebody that is very insecure, has abandonment issues, I don't know why I picked that career choice at that time, because it was just like, I'm not good enough for anybody. With that being said, I want to thank you for coming on the show. I think we are going to have Vanessa back on. I guarantee it. It's been lovely talking to you. It's been a great pleasure being able to discuss Hollywood with someone that actually understands to the degree I do. Yeah. And the degree Vanessa understands it is she can't go to the Hollywood I go to, and I can't go to the Hollywood she goes to. That's the cool part about it.
Blow your mind, man.
We're crazy. Yeah.
Thank you for having me on. It's been fun. It's been nice to talk to somebody like that I haven't seen in so long. I have a few friends that I talked to over there in Santa Maria, but this has been great.
I know. We'll have to do this again. We'll have to do this in person. We'll have to do it where you live. I don't want to stay. You can't come here. We have to go to LA. There's more stuff to do there. Yeah. I'll have to show you my LA and Hollywood, and then you show me yours, and it'll be good times.
Yeah, that sounds great.
So for Vanessa Valley and Tony the Beat, this is Spread Hope Like Fire.
I want to thank everybody for joining the show tonight. Remember, Spread Hope Like Fire Foundation is still launching. It is not asking for any donations whatsoever. Before you go, I ask that you hit the like button, leave a review or a comment down below, hit the share button. You can get the audio version of this podcast on Apple iTunes, Google Play Store, Stitcher, Stitcher Premium, Spotify, and all your other major podcast carriers. I do ask that you all head over to Apple iTunes, type in Spread Hope Like Fire, subscribe to the podcast. And the one way in which I can ask for your support as a listener at this time is leave a review for the podcast over at Apple iTunes. It helps the algorithm, and also, and as we get closer to the 1,000 mark review, what I'm going to be doing is once we hit that, I'm going to be doing a raffle. So anybody that's left a review or can still go leave a review, once we hit the 1,000 mark, what I'm going to do is I'm going to raffle off a $100 Amazon gift card or a $100 Target gift card, your choice, to one of the 1,000 people that have left a review. For those of you who went over to the Apple podcast, and what I'll do is I'll draw it live, and then you can message me for the $100 gift card of your choice. So head over to Apple Podcasts, leave the review. It helps the algorithm. For Tony the Beat, I'm Tony the Beat. This is Spread Hope Like Fire. Have a good night, everybody. Spread Hope Like Fire is a production of the Spread Hope Like Fire Foundation, a 501c3 nonprofit. As always, I like to remind everybody, the things that we discuss upon the podcast are not a substitute or a replacement for seeking treatment and getting professional help. If in fact you are struggling with your mental health, we urge you to please reach out to your community and see which professionals are accepting new clients and get that professional help and talking to that professional that you need. This show is intended as a educational and informational psychoeducation of the field of psychology. For Spread Hope Like Fire and Anthony G, I'm Anthony G, and we will see you later.